Welcome to Free and Local, a series of five programmes where Near FM, together with a group of people from the National Council for the Blind of Ireland, visit some of the fantastic cultural places of interest we have here on Dublin's North Side. We're hoping that the input from the National Council for the Blind will allow people to understand the experience of being visually impaired and help see past people's limitations. The official guides at each of the venues will help to make the visits as visual as possible, bringing them to life with vivid descriptions that you, our listeners, can also enjoy. Every one of the world-class places of interest we will visit are within easy reach, open to the public, and even better, free of charge. Come along with us and experience them anew, using all your senses, as we explore some of the best that North Dublin has to offer. In our last visit of the Free and Local series, we've decided that it was about time to enjoy the fresh air and are visiting a nature reserve that is right on our doorsteps. It's time to visit Bull Island in Clontarf.
I believe you're all volunteers.
Yep.
Did you check out with this fellow what you're volunteering for? The North Bull Island is the most protected piece of land in Ireland. We have some extremely rare habitats on the island. The whole ecosystem and the ecology of the island is very important. I won't bore you with the legal details, but just to say that the island here is a state nature reserve. It's also a UNESCO biosphere reserve. The island itself is only 200 years old. Dublin Bay here is not just famous for sandbars, but for shifting sandbars. So what happened was, the famous Captain William Bligh, same man from the HMS Bounty, was sent here to Dublin to survey the bay area to see what could be done about this situation. The most important recommendation was the building of a second wall. The South Bull was already in situ, and the idea being to create a bottleneck at the entrance to the harbour. So when the tide was receding, the water had to leave under pressure. So any mud or silt or sandbars trying to form at the mouth of the harbour, well, the pressure of water would just burst straight through, maintaining a straight and deep channel. So when the North Bull Wall was built, there was a lot of silting on one of those sandbars. The sandbar grew, and that's the Bull Island as we know it today. The island is one of only 2,000 barrier islands worldwide. Engineers will tell you seawalls and so on, yeah, 100 years max. But if we look after places like the North Bull Island here, what nature is doing the repair work. At our peak here during the winter, we'd have somewhere in the region of up to 30,000 wading birds. And most of them come down from northern regions to spend the winter with us. Usually with wading birds, you get a lot of information just by the length of the legs and the length of the beak. If we take a turnstone, for instance, short little legs, a short little beak, and they feed right at the edge of the water. And then we move up to the oyster catcher, which incidentally don't eat oysters. We find them out in the mud flats and their longer legs and a much longer beak, so as they can probe down into the mud. You can hear them early in the morning, right through the winter months. Then we have the curlew, has a very, very long beak, and they can go right down. They can sense where the worms are, and they can probe down and pull them out of the mud. Brent geese, we'd have somewhere in the region of about 3,000. And most of our geese come from Arctic Canada, a place called Bathurst Island. I've often offered to go up and count them up in the Arctic, but the boss is not biting on that one. So we're stuck with them here. To the north of us here, we have a seal colony. It's one of the very few places where you will find the grey seal and the harbour seal in the one area. A bull seal can have up to 40 females in its harem. The females live for about 45 years, and the males live for about 20 years. I don't have to explain that one, do I? Poor fella, worn out. Other mammals then, we'd have lots of rabbits on the island. The rabbit would be, I suppose, the most important mammal we have on the sand dune system. Thanks to the rabbit, the North Bull Island here is a botanical area of international importance. Because the rabbit is like a mammalian lawnmower. They just chomp, chomp, chomp all day long, and they keep the dune turf in what's termed an immature state of development. Then we get these beautiful little gems growing on the shorter turf. We also have hares on the island. I'm sure you've all heard of the Mad March hare. Literally during March here, you can see them out there on the golf greens, and they're boxing each other around the place. It's a female fighting off male suitors that she's not interested in. So I think what we'll do, it's a beautiful morning out there, we might just have a little walk around the place and we'll see what's on the little track around. Grass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'd just like to say that we're now out of the lecture hall.
Yeah.
And this means the lecture is over.
Yay!
So now it's your turn, guys, okay? So if you have any questions or if you have anything to add, just feel free, okay? Because I'm going hoarse at this stage. Now, we're going to start. Just look at this little plant here. Now, just be extremely careful. There are very sharp thorns on this. Handle it very, very gently. This plant is called Hippophae rhamnoides, or sea buckthorn. Just when you're feeling it, you will notice that the leaves are a little bit waxy and some very, very short hairs on it. Now, this is what the plant uses to combat all that airborne salt that's in the air around here. Okay, they can get rid of the salt. They don't let it penetrate into the plant. But this plant was planted on the island by the golf courses because of the thorns, because they wanted this impenetrable barrier around their golf courses. They don't like commoners going in. So it was planted a long, long time ago. It was introduced into Ireland because it can stabilize sand dunes, because a lot of sand dunes suffer from erosion. And they discovered that this plant here, the sea buckthorn, was very good at stabilizing the sand. So it was introduced here. But then they discovered there's nothing else competes with it, and it keeps spreading. And it's not great news for the nature reserve here at all. And we spend a lot of money here each year trying to eradicate this plant. The biggest problem with it is it spreads through rhizomes. Now, rhizomes are part of the root system that can form new plants. So by chopping down the plant, it doesn't mean you've killed it. So it's an extremely hard one to get rid of. The other problem we have with it are the little berries I have in my hand. Now, the birds eat these berries, and then they fly away, and then they drop the seeds. So you get the plant growing different places in the island. This is another problem. So we reckon for every berry that's taken away from this island, well, potentially it's one less plant. And when these berries are ripe, we invite people down here to pick them, because they're very viable. They make very good jams and jellies and ice cream and all sorts of these. And each little berry, the size of a frozen pea, has as much vitamin C as 6 oranges. Okay? So we encourage people when they're ripe in October. Now, best to wait until after a good frost, okay, because it makes them really sweet. Come down here, take them away, make your tarts, make your ice creams. You can have a sniff of them, and they smell, I suppose, a little bit like apples. Can you smell apple from it?
Yeah.
Very strong, though. Local chef Liam Maloney has come up with some fantastic recipes.
I'd like that.
And they're actually on the Dublin City Council website. Oh, the other thing about these berries is they're full of antioxidants. So they're very, very good. And face creams. You can see my complexion here.
Oh,
yes. Yes, absolutely.
And can you show me on the ground where they are? You just showed them in your hand. Well, I don't know where you got it from.
Yeah, it's over at the fence here behind us.
Wouldn't it be good to collect them to get a tart made?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. If you want to come back at another stage, we'll encourage you to take the berries away.
Definitely.
Okay, did we all have a sniff?
Yeah, thank you.
So we'll just go for a little ramble. Now, here we have marram grass, one of the most important grasses we have here. And I'll just pass that around as well. And just feel how the stalks of grass are a kind of a roundish shape.
Yeah.
And I'll explain why that is now in a minute. This is the seed head. And you can feel the seed. It is a grass, so it just has a big cylindrical flower head on it, as any grass would. All right.
This is the seed head here. Right, yeah, you can hear it when it crunches.
Oh, yes, yes, isn't it? Oh, super. Is that a particular colour?
The stem is, what colour would that be?
It's a sandy colour.
Sandy colour, yeah. It is a sandy, beigeish colour. Yeah. And the seed head would be green right through the summer, but now that's ripening, and that turns this beautiful golden colour as well.
It must be pretty.
Yeah.
The leaves are green, like bugs.
Now, we were talking about the shape of those leaves. They're kind of a cylindrical shape. You can feel what's happening there. They're kind of curled over, and you can try and spread them out there. They will open up like a normal grass. What's happening here? This plant has evolved for life in this situation. We use sand in our pot plants, isn't that right, for drainage and so on. So sand can't really hold water. So this plant is growing throughout the dunes here. In fact, it's the backbone of the dune system. During a dry period or a very windy period, what happens is the grass stems roll up very, very tight, like a piece of straw.
And what's happening there is the plant is cutting down on its surface area, cutting down on the rate of transpiration, the rate of water loss. And in this way, it can withstand a very, very long drought period. Now, we were saying how important the plant is. The marram grass has a root system of over 3 metres long. But it's what we call a shallow rooter. It stays near the surface. And it has this ability to trap sand. Can tolerate inundation by sand right through the whole year. So what's happening is the sand will come in, it'll bury the vegetation, bury the shoots here, and then the plant has the ability to split the shoots, and it pushes it up over that freshly deposited sand, and that process will continue. More sand will come in, once again the plant is buried, once again the shoot splits and so on. And this is how the sand dunes grow, from a little pile to the sand dune systems on the island here, roughly about 6 metres high. And that's all down to this system here, where the marram grass is trapping the sand and it's building the sand dune system. So that's just how the plant has evolved for life in this situation. And the fact that it needs to be buried, if you go and bury a plant in your garden at home, and go back 10 days later, dig it, it's dead. This needs to be buried by fresh sand so it can survive. So did we all get a look at it?
Yeah.
A good feel of it and how it, how we can unroll it? And
I wouldn't say look, I say we got a good feel.
Okay. We'll ramble on another bit.
Okay.
I'm embarrassing the man now.
Well, it's true. None of us can see.
We like to keep some nettles on the island here as well. I mean, I won't be handing this one around, okay? But nettles are very, very important as well on the island, because this is the food plant of, well, I suppose one of my favourite butterflies, which is the peacock butterfly. And the thing with these butterflies, especially the caterpillar stage, they can't eat any old thing. They have specific food plants. And this is the food plant of the peacock butterfly. And, well, people don't like nettles in their gardens. They don't like nettles on their playing pitches or whatever, so they're usually either sprayed or chopped down. So with the peacock butterfly, literally we're taking the food out of their mouths, because that's the only plant they'll feed on. So normally at the edge of a woodland you'll have a nice big stand of nettles, and that's where you will see the peacock butterfly, as many as 100 tiny little black caterpillars munching away on the leaves there. So we like to keep it on the island. It arrived naturally, and we have little patches of it around the place as a food plant. The peacock butterfly, it would be red and black, and in the centre of each wing there's this beautiful eye spot, red and black. And the reason for these eye spots, when a peacock butterfly is at rest, the wings are closed. And if a bird should come along and try and eat it, they open the wings very fast, and the bird sees these two big eyes looking back at him. And it frightens them just sufficiently that they back off so as the butterfly can escape. But the beautiful reds and black, there's some blue in there as well. They're a fairly large Irish butterfly. Now, we'll just ramble on another bit.
Yes, I was up here the other week.
I won't ask you what you're up to.
I was walking three dogs.
I just passed this plant around now. This is Lady's Bedstraw. And you will like this story. The reason it gets the name Lady's Bedstraw is that back in Victorian times they used to stuff mattresses with this here, just to give it a nice smell. Mm-hmm. It looks fairly spiky from the foliage on it, but you can see it's extremely soft, and the flower head is yellow, and again it's a kind of a fluffy feel to it.
Yeah.
Would that put you in the humour?
Yeah. I didn't even smell it.
This is the foliage, and that's a green colour.
Yes.
The stem, again, is a kind of a golden colour.
Yeah.
And then when you move up to the flower head, you can feel it's very, very soft, and that's yellow.
Oh, I see.
All right.
And just remain that colourway all the time.
Right through the whole summer.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Now, here we have this plant here. Is called Harefoot Clover. And the reason it gets the name Harefoot Clover is that the flower on it looks a little bit like a hare's foot and would be the same coloration as the fur on a hare's foot. They're beautiful, soft little plants. And I'll just pass that around there as well. Like the dandelions, they have these little parachutes and they can travel in the wind and land in different places and then germinate and grow. The Harefoot Clover is from a family of plants that we're very much depending on the island, and the family of plants called legumes. We said earlier on about the sand not holding water, but sea sand is what we would call a very, very poor growing medium. There's not an awful lot of nutrients in sea sand. So with these legumes around the place taking that atmospheric nitrogen, fixing it in the soil, they're actually feeding the ground that surrounds them. So with the enrichment of the soil, that means that other plants can move in. A lot of the plants on the island here are legumes. All of the clover family, we have the Viola tricolour, tiny little sea pansy, and these are nitrogen fixers as well, so enriching the soil as time goes on. Okay?
This is all very relevant to our gardening class.
Okay, we have a few little plants here. This one here is the perpetual sweet pea, okay? And that was dumped on the island here. I try and differentiate between exotics and invasive. The invasive plants would do some damage. This one grows happily around the place. It doesn't seem to damage any of the sandlings. And this is the seed head.
All right. Like a pea pod.
Like a pea pod, it is. Like the pea pod. Yeah. And little seeds on the inside bit there.
Does it smell?
It's like broom,
There's not a great smell from it, no.
Isn't that like broom, is it?
Yeah, same family. Again, we're back to the legumes.
Yeah.
Which would be the pea family. So the broom and all that would have the little pods on them.
It's very subtle.
It's not like the sweet pea we buy in the garden centre each spring. This one comes back year after year after year. Okay. So we'll walk on another little bit. We're heading down towards the beach now. You'll hear the waves breaking now shortly. Right, this plant here is another exotic, okay? Another garden escape. But again, it doesn't seem to do any damage on the sand dune, so we're not too worried about it at the moment. This is evening primrose, okay? And it gets the name evening primrose because once the sun starts setting, you can get a beautiful scent.
Is it pink in colour?
It's a yellow. And the reason a lot of these plants give off that scent at night time is because they use moths to pollinate them. Now, we have the flower here.
Yeah.
And on the top, then, we have the seed head.
Up here. Now, that's much different than primrose. Although it's the same colour.
It is a yellow primrose colour where it gets the name, but it's not even the primrose family.
Okay.
It's just that beautiful yellow flower on it. The seed head on the top.
Yeah.
And the seed head is like... It's a little cylinder there, and there's a little hole in the top.
Yes.
And when it ripens,
that'll open
the segments just open back, and the seeds are dispersed. Okay?
Yeah.
And it has lots and lots of seeds in there, hundreds of seeds in each head.
Oh, right. Evening primrose.
Yeah, nice.
They make a dietary supplement out of
they
evening primrose.
Yeah. Wow.
Is there a smell?
Yeah, there is. There is, yeah.
It's be very faint now at this time. Yeah, it is later on in the evening now. It is used in nerve tonics. And I haven't tried it, but I'm told it's a great cure for a hangover. I
haven't tried it. Yes.
That'll be with the snacks that you made.
Okay, so we'll move on another little bit.
Talking about the buckthorn earlier on and the amount of money that it costs us to try and eradicate it from the island, and the JCB here behind us is just ripping that plant out of the ground here, trying to cause as little disturbance to the sand dune system. And that program that's ongoing here every winter, where we're trying to eradicate that plant totally from the island.
Will we ever achieve that though?
Will we ever? We need resources.
Yeah.
We depend mostly on volunteers to come down and help us to dig it out and to cut it out, and we inject it then with glyphosate. We can't go around spraying weeds because we don't know what we're going to hit underneath. So each stump has to be drilled and injected. To be quite honest, with the resources that we have, eradicating it is going to be a very long-term plan, and that's why we're so dependent on volunteers to come here and help us to try and keep it under control. This little plant here, yes, looks like a daisy, like a yellow daisy, is ragwort. And if a farmer had that in his field, now he'd be in trouble, because ragwort is poisonous to livestock. It's what we call a notifiable plant. If a farmer had it, and the onus is on him then to clear it, otherwise he could get heavily fined by the Department of Agriculture because it spread to other farmlands.
What height does that go at?
The highest I've seen it would be, I suppose, roughly about half a metre. Okay?
Yeah.
All right, does anyone want to have a feel of it there? A little okay, flower, a little yellow it. Flower. That, oh, it's okay to hold it, yeah.
It's okay to hold it.
He wants to get some into the garden.
Now, the interesting thing about this plant is we have two daytime moths on the island here. The cinnabar moth is one of them, and the burnet moth. Now, these are daytime moths. So if they're out flying during the day, well, they're sticking out like sore thumbs, so they'd be easy for birds to pick them off and that. But birds won't eat them. The caterpillars of these moths feed on the ragwort. So they have cyanide in their system. But the colours they use, the caterpillars use black and yellow bars. In nature, that spells danger. So birds won't eat them. And then the adults use black and red as warning colours, which are also warnings in nature that they're poisonous. So the birds won't eat them either. And you can see them flitting around here right through the whole summer. What insect uses black and yellow bars as a warning? What's the one we all run from?
Wasps.
Wasps and bees, yeah, black and yellow. All right. And what about black spots on an orange background? What's everyone's favourite little bug?
Ladybird.
The ladybird, yeah. The ladybird. And when we pick ladybirds up, they have a poison in their knee joints and they let this poison fly. Now, it doesn't do us any harm, but if a bird was to pick it up, it would have to be with its beak. And the left fly with the poison stings the mouth off the bird.
We'll learn something new there.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so we're just heading out onto the beach now. So did we bring the togs?
Inny.
The sound of the ocean.
That's
gorgeous,
it? Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah.
Especially when we don't have the wind, you can just hear it lapping there, the waves breaking. It's a nice calming effect. You could nearly lie down there and go to sleep, couldn't you?
Yeah.
I won't though, just in case the boss is listening to the program. Okay, so we're right at the edge of the Dublin Bay here now on the beach, and tide is just rising there at the moment. And during the winter, the tide goes right up onto the tarmac, just where the tarmac ran out, and you start walking on the sand, and the tide can go in that far in the big, big winter storms, okay? But again, we were talking about the barrier island and the way that the island takes the energy out of that storm surge so it won't effectively reach the mainland. So, any questions on what we've done? Are we all happy? Or any comments? Now, what's our nice comments? It's not very often in the world where you'll find something like the North Bull Island here. It's only a few kilometres from the centre of our capital city. We've one of the busiest ports here right in our doorstep. And I think it's nice to see that people have somewhere like this just to come and relax in the evening or after work or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, if you look back in old Admiralty charts of Dublin Bay, you'll see what was known as Green Island. And if you move to a chart 50 years on, you'll see Green Island, but it's moved somewhere else. And this goes on, and you're kind of thinking, could these guys not draw maps, or what was the situation? But that sandbar, what was happening was the vegetation would try and take hold on the sandbar. The next winter storm would demolish the whole thing, and another sandbar would have formed somewhere else, and the vegetation would try and take hold. So it's not until the North Bull Wall here was built that everything settled down. And the vegetation took hold and it began to grow.
Wasn't it an amazingly simple answer to a rather huge problem, the wall, wasn't it?
It was, absolutely,
amazing.
Yeah.
When you think of all how we've progressed with all our computers, that nothing except the two walls are doing brilliant, are keeping the port open, in other words, are they?
Oh, absolutely.
And what was Captain Bligh's job before the bounty?
He was a cartographer, and the interesting thing, he used to do all the mapping and that for the British Admiralty.
He made maps?
Yeah.
Well, how did he know about the tide that's going to do this?
Well, I'll tell you now, I'll give you the type of mind Captain Bligh had. When Ireland took receipt of our Celtic Voyager, which is one of the most advanced research vessels in the world, and when they took receipt of that ship, they decided to go over all Captain Bligh's waypoints, just to see, did anything need a little bit of updating or whatever. And they had the most modern technology, and they surveyed the bay right down to the Arklow Bank here. Yeah. Not one mistake.
Amazing.
And to think that he had
amazing.
A weight and a ball of string.
Yeah.
You know, unbelievable. Not the nicest man to work for, but he had a fantastic brain.
nice to know that man has caused something that's now a wildlife haven. Like, we're usually taken away from nature, but we actually...
Absolutely, yes. So some people say that the island is man-made. Well, it's not really man-made. It came about by the influence of man, but, you know, it arrived here naturally. And the model from here is used elsewhere to protect islands and to protect mainlands in different areas. Okay, so are we all happy? Grand stuff.
That's lovely.
All right. Now we'll head up whenever you're ready. You can enjoy that for a few minutes. And whenever you're ready, then we can head back up.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
So if I can just make one suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
You were speaking about the birds and the bird song. Is it possible that you could, in fact, record those sounds, the songs of those birds?
We're Dublin City Council. We're actually working on that at the moment.
That's excellent. And also the cries of the seals.
Yeah.
For me, that is the magic of these sort of outings,
is to hear the different songbird sounds.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Once the CD is available, what I'll do is I'll get in touch.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, good to see you guys.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All
very
the best.
Enjoyable. Thanks. Enjoy that. Thanks very
good
much.
Good stuff. Okay, all the best. Bye-bye.
With the sounds and smells of the Irish Sea still all around us, it's time to grab a cup of tea and reflect on our last visit. Let's hear what our colleagues from the NCBI have to say.
It was very, very special because I would be a person who always have worked with plants and flowers in a garden. I just enjoy plants and I can get sort of magic. I put my two hands around the flower itself. And I know whether it's a sulky mood or perhaps it's doing very well. It's amazing what your hands and your smell and your sense of touch, what pictures they can draw for you. Because I would have seen at one stage, so I would have the advantage of having seen them before. But I can recall them now quite vividly with my hands and my smell. So I would tactilely, I would read what the flowers are like. I would use my smell as well. I would do gardening at home. So even if you're on site, you can appreciate flowers, new grasses, as you showed us today.
But also the medicinal side of them, isn't health related.
The only thing about the centre itself was the steps, two flights of steps up for people like, you know, with impairments. That's all. Other than that, I mean, it fascinated me because you walk on grass every day and you don't realise what's in it, you know. And the wildlife, fantastic.
The walk would be fine for wheelchairs because it's mostly...
If it rained today, it would have been trouble.
No, you definitely had the weather all organised for us this morning.
And we go back when the frost comes and get the plants. We're a bit ahead. Get the berries and make some tarts or jam or whatever.
Or do we get the berries?
More of an interest, snaps. Sure.
Right, thanks very
wonderful.
Much.
So here we are, at the end of the series Free and Local. During the past five programmes, we've had the opportunity to visit five incredible venues situated right here on Dublin's north side, proving that we do not need to travel thousands of miles to find world-class venues. And just to remind you, we've been to Bull Island, Farley House, Oras an Uachtaráin, the Hugh Lane Gallery and the National Botanic Gardens. Just a selection of wonderful places to visit, free and local, for you, our listeners. Thanks to all in the National Council for the Blind of Ireland for helping us to make this series possible and for being such good fun to work with. To listen to the podcast of the programmes, please go to the Near FM webpage.
This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.